Read and hear more about important news and policy issues at ncpolicywatch.com. This is News and Views.
Welcome to News and Views. I'm your host, Rob Schofield. LGBT North Carolinians have made a lot of progress in recent years in obtaining something akin to equal rights with their fellow citizens. But in far too many areas, genuine equality remains elusive. From the drumbeat of discriminatory proposals of the Trump administration to the efforts of the North Carolina State Treasurer, Dale Falwell, to cut off essential health care coverage for transgender state employees and dependents enrolled in the state health plan, the roadblocks keep rearing their ugly heads. Recently, I sat down to discuss these issues and others with one of the state's best-informed experts on the battle for equal rights, Attorney Ames Simmons of Equality North Carolina. Well, Ames Simmons, welcome to News and Views. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me. It's always a pleasure, Rob.
You're doing a lot of amazing work for Equality North Carolina. Tell our listeners a little bit, remind them who Equality North Carolina is.
Sure. Equality North Carolina is a statewide organization that advocates for the health, safety, and equity of our state's lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and queer people, or LGBTQ North Carolinians.
Glad you're doing that work. It's obviously incredibly important. You know, we now have marriage equality in America, and for many Americans, thought, okay, that's taken care of. I don't have to worry about that issue anymore. And of course, that's not even close to being the reality. We continue to have tremendous challenges, tremendous roadblocks put in the way of folks. Talk to us about some of the key ones right now. We know the Trump administration has been making some disturbing actions in recent weeks and months.
Sure. Even after marriage equality, the truth for many people is that we live in a state that doesn't have explicit protections for sexual orientation or gender identity. So even though people of the same sex may be able to get married, they could also be fired for coming out or lose their housing or any number of discriminations. So it's
denied service in a public accommodation. Somebody could refuse to rent you a hotel room or give you a cab ride, right?
Yes. Of course, North Carolina has taken discrimination in public accommodations, which is the legal term for public places and spaces, to a whole new level after our state passed HB2 and then the so-called repeal of HB2 in the form of HB 142 that still prohibits local governments from being able to protect LGBTQ people in public accommodations or in private employment until December 2020 and permanently restricts local governments from protecting trans people's use of restrooms in public. And the Trump administration has really taken the animus behind those laws to a new level with this latest memo that the New York Times leaked. And we should be clear, like, I haven't seen the actual memo. I don't know anyone who has seen the memo.
Reports, though, credible reports.
Yes, that the Department of Health and Human Services Office for Civil Rights wants to redefine gender for all federal government purposes as based on the sex that someone was assigned at birth. And they say that if there's any question or challenge about what that person's gender is, that it would be fixed by getting a genetic test. Like, we have no idea who's going to pay for this chromosomal testing, much less the fallacy that this is going to conclusively show what someone's gender is or isn't. We thought that that redefinition was going to come out in some regulations affecting Title IX that just came out a couple days ago. And those regulations did not have this redefinition of gender, but they had, you know, other bad things as far as campus sexual assault, which is also a pressing issue in our state.
Obviously, this issue of the rights of transgender individuals is a right up front issue right now in North Carolina, because we've got the state health plan, which is administered by a board, but that board is led by Treasurer Dale Falwell, who's been trying to reverse some progress that had been made there under the previous treasurer in extending coverage to transgender individuals. And now we're going to go backwards, back to the minority of states that don't provide that coverage.
So the state health plan had decided in December of 2016 that they were going to remove this longstanding exclusion that they had had on covering treatment related to transition for transgender people. They remove the exclusion for plan year 2017. So people who are trans employees of our state or teachers, this is almost
their children, perhaps.
Right, sure, with trans dependents. This is, you know, 750,000 people right. in our state that are covered by the state health plan may have started a course of treatment around gender transition because the services were now going to be covered in 2017. And I know some folks were a ways down the road toward gender transition, and immediately in the new year this year, they started receiving denials because the state health plan had added back in this exclusion. They say that they had simply allowed the coverage to sunset, that they didn't actually make an official decision. But they certainly have the opportunity to make those employees whole for this year for what they've come out of pocket. And we hope that they will take the opportunity to conciliate. And they have the opportunity still to remove the exclusion for plan year 2019. They had been saying that it was based on cost. Treasurer Falwell has been very outspoken about how much money he's saving the state by the way that he administers the state health plan. But we know that cost considerations are negligible when it comes to this coverage. And immediately after the Trump administration leaked this memo about redefining gender, his messaging immediately shifted to talking about how there was no consensus that this coverage was not cosmetic or elective. And that just is not in line with current science or with medical consensus.
It's a remarkable step backwards that we hope that they'll rethink. There are a lot of corporations in America who are a long way ahead of our state government and the current leadership in the federal government. It's one instance in which corporate America is actually dragging along government with it in many respects, wouldn't you say?
In some ways, I think that's true. The Fortune 500 has started covering gender transitions since, in a big way, since 2009 or 10, when the Human Rights Campaign added this as a criterion for the Corporate Equality Index. And so companies who wanted to stay competitive found a way to start adding this coverage. So larger companies for sure have adopted this. And the regulations that the Obama administration put out in May of 2016 encouraged many additional employers to find plans that had this coverage, but there were still some holdouts, including even some Medicaid agencies that still had exclusions, and they are being sued because of those regulations. And in fact, Wisconsin's state health plan, they had an exclusion almost identical to the one that we have here in North Carolina, and a federal court gave a judgment of $780,000 to the two trans plaintiffs in that case. So if we're really trying to be fiscally responsible with the state health plan, then we should not be putting in place practices that are legally going to cost the state a lot of money if they continue to pursue them.
We'll hope that they have a change of heart. One area in this realm where we've seen some hopeful signs in recent weeks and months is that we continue to see more LGBTQ candidates making strides in our elections. We just had, obviously, the November election, and there were hundreds of candidates elected nationwide, and that continues to grow. Are you heartened by that at all? Do you see some positive signs there?
There are a lot of signs that our government is slowly becoming more diverse. For example, the first bisexual senator was elected from Arizona, Kyrsten Sinema, and Tammy Baldwin, the first openly lesbian senator, kept her seat. We also saw interesting trans candidates running, like Christine Hallquist, who ran for governor of Vermont. She didn't win her race, but it was an important statement to the trans community that running for office is something that is viable. In addition to Danica Roem, who was elected to the State House in Virginia last year, this year we saw some additional trans candidates who were elected to the State House in New Hampshire. Here in North Carolina, we added some LGBTQ representation to our State House with Allison Dahl. We'll be excited to see what will be the possibilities in the upcoming long session now that the supermajority appears to be conclusively broken in both chambers.
One issue, though, that is likely going to get dealt with, is being dealt with as we speak prior to the new session of the General Assembly, is the issue of voter ID. And that remains an issue that a lot of people are very concerned about, the efforts to impose a very strict voter ID law. There are implications. It's probably something we haven't thought, a lot of people haven't thought about, that, you know, people's image changes. You get a photograph and it may change. And sometimes there'll be questions about whether that photograph is really you. And it raises all kinds of issues, especially for folks in the trans community. I know your organization has spoken out against this voter ID law.
A lot is going to ride on the way that the NCGA, with their current supermajority, writes those implementing laws, how strict or narrow they are going to make the photographic requirements, which have now been added to our Constitution so that another legislature will not be able to overturn them. If the law is as strict as it has been in some places and only allows a driver's license or a military ID or a passport, that is going to be difficult for many transgender people who have not been able to update our documents because of a really outdated policy to change your gender marker. And it's also going to affect many marginalized communities. It's going to be difficult for people who are older to vote. It's going to have a disproportionate impact on communities of color. It's going to be more difficult for younger people to figure out where they're supposed to vote. So we will continue to try to do as much education about this as possible. The main thing is that we don't want trans people to be afraid to vote. It's very important that folks understand, even if there is a voter ID requirement, that poll workers are not supposed to be guessing your gender or turning you away from the polls. And there are good resources online that have been there for years because of voter ID requirements. The National Center for Trans Equality has a Voting While Trans page that has some suggestions for people to go to before they vote, and as well as to know what to say to poll workers if they are asked to cast a provisional ballot, for example.
Critically important issue, and there are a lot more we'll be working on in the year ahead. We thank you for all the great work you do for us and hope we'll have a conversation again soon. If folks want to learn more about equality, it's equalitync.org, right?
That is correct. Please feel free to come visit our website or come to one of our events. We'd love to see as many folks in the community as we can.
Well, thank you again, Ames. We'll do this again real soon.
Thank you, Rob.
Coming up next, part one of a special two-part look at the challenges confronting North Carolina's system of public higher education. Stay with us.